Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Here we are, ready for another new week on Connecting Faith. So glad to have you tuned in. I'm Neil Stavem. Welcome to the broadcast here on Faith Radio. We have a good discussion today. I think some very practical, helpful insight and advice from some wise ladies who have joined us on the broadcast. But I always appreciate you joining us. And a reminder, by the way, if you missed part of the program for whatever reason, maybe just a lunch hour and you got a little bit of time to listen in, or you're between projects, you can always catch the podcast after the show online at myfaithradio.com. And if you're new to Faith Radio, I want to say welcome, maybe just even visiting in the area, you can visit myfaithradio.com and find out a little bit more about us. In fact, we have a new listener, a little welcome packet that we'd love to send you as well, just to kind of give you a little information about who we are. And so you can sign up for that online, myfaithradio.com. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa's on the phones. Ted, you have students that are in the target audience for our discussion today.
Right? I do. My daughter's 13 and 11, start school a week from today into eighth grade and sixth grade.
And so have you gotten all the supplies, all the clothes, all the needed, anything left that has to be done?
No, we did pretty well with that. The budget took a little hit, but we're okay. You know, trying to plan accordingly.
Yeah.
So we're ready to go. I don't know if they're excited. It's a little early than most other schools start, but they're ready. I don't know if we're ready, though, because eighth grade, I mean, especially, that's a tough age in some ways.
And will they be moving to different schools or the same ones they went to last year?
Same one right now. Maybe next year we might make a switch for high school. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about middle school, the inside story. That's the title of this new book, Middle School, the Inside Story, What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. And we've got guests in the line that have great experience in this area. Cynthia Tobias, she's a best-selling author of The Way We Learn and several other books. You hear her regularly on Focus on the Family. We had her on not too long ago, and we're happy to welcome her back, as well as Sue Acuna. Sue is a mother of, Sue is the mother of twin sons. Is that right, Sue? You're also the mother of twin sons?
No, actually, I have three boys.
Three boys, that's right, yes. And, I was just looking at the wrong page here. But Sue is a teacher. In fact, you're going back in, a couple weeks?
Right, teaching eighth grade.
Okay, so Ted, this will be especially important for you because Sue's going to give you some inside tips. Sue and Cynthia. Cynthia, of course, has been focusing on teaching for several decades and has done some teaching and obviously helping us with some important information about the way we learn. And so today's program, I think, will be particularly helpful if you have a middle schooler in your family, or maybe it's a grandchild that's in middle school and you want to be helpful, or it's in your church and you just like to know how we can make these the best years for our kids. And we've got some copies of the book to give away. So let me just say that right away. If you'd like to get in and at least sign up for a copy of the book, and we'd love to make sure that you get your question answered as well. The number is 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We're talking middle school, the inside story, what kids tell us but don't tell you. And it's from Tyndale, Cynthia Tobias, Sue Acuna. My guest today, ladies, welcome again. Is it harder for the child or the parent during these years? What would you say? Cynthia, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, that's a really good question because that can vary by the day. but according to the kids, you know, they think it's harder for them, I think. But for the parents, it's not hard as much as it is exasperating. I mean, how are you supposed to even predict what's going to happen from one day to the next? And so I think it's most reassuring for parents to know, okay, this is normal, and we're not going to have to, it's not going to last forever, and there are some practical things we can do to make it a whole lot better.
Sue, would you concur?
I would. I would add for parents, it's difficult because suddenly the child they thought they knew is becoming someone a little bit different. And I think for parents to stay connected and to stay open and not to panic would be my key advice.
And in what ways are they not the kids that we thought we knew? I mean, is it just the physical or kind of hormonal changes?
I just figure they're changing so much emotionally, spiritually, physically, mentally, all these things going on at once, and they become a little bit more self-absorbed as they watch these changes happen and try to adapt to them. And so your 8-year-old who used to run up to you and say, Mommy, Mommy, guess what we did in school today, might now be a 13-year-old who, when you say, Hi, honey, how was school, just shrugs and says, Fine. And parents don't know exactly what that means or how to take that. Is that personal rejection, or is that, like Cynthia said, just normal behavior?
And when you look at transition of parenting, it's a critical time to transition your parenting. And I'm not sure that parents, unless they've really kind of prepared for it, I think it catches us off guard, because in elementary school, the parent was the manager and director of this child's life and pretty much guided and directed everything. And now all of a sudden, things have shifted, and the parent really almost has to be more of a consultant to still be there. Your kids still really need you, but they need you to step back a little, relax your grip, not take your hands off the wheel, not let them get by with anything, but just relaxing a little bit to figure out, okay, how am I going to start to let go enough for them to figure out what they need to do to mature and how they need to grow?
And that, I guess, is, you know, we'd love if there were just sort of simple, easy steps and, you know, maybe a little chart box you could check off, say, all right, my child is, you know, now I can step back in this area. But, I mean, it really varies even within your own family, right, from child to child.
Oh, definitely, because what hits one when he wakes up one morning and suddenly things, he's not happy with the clothes that he wants to wear, or she's not happy with the activity she's involved in. And it's, for one child, it can be 10 years old. For another child, it might not be till 12.
There are, however, three basic things that you can count on across the board, and we did mention those in the book. The three fundamental things that every middle schooler can benefit from is, number one, to be actually listened to, and number two, to be understood, even if that's only saying, oh, wow, you really had a bad day. It's not, and number three is to be taken seriously. In other words, not to have a parent say, oh, you don't have it hard. You think you have it hard. Wait till you get a mortgage and a car payment and then talk to me. If you can keep the listening without interrupting and the understanding through empathy and the taking seriously, in that, and again, it goes back to listening, because for them, this little tiny thing is their whole life. And if you can keep those three things undergirding everything you do, it will make life a whole lot easier, regardless of the style of child.
I'm wondering, Cynthia, just in terms of, you know, to listen to, if your child sort of comes home from school and says, fine, you know, and, you know, how's your day? Fine. Goes to their room, closes the door. Then it's like, well, I'm ready to listen, but they don't seem ready to talk.
Yeah, but you know what it usually is, Neil, and Sue finds this over and over again. And talking to the kids, they told us this too. In fact, just recently we talked to another group of kids there at Focus on the Family, and they said, you know, we wish our parents would listen, but as soon as we start talking, they go, oh, yeah, that's good, that's okay. And they just go on with their life, or they're checking their smartphone or their email, or they don't really pay any attention to us, they say. And so when they get that a couple times, they pretty much shut down, and they aren't really interested in sharing again, because ironically, it's the same thing that the parents are frustrated about with them for interrupting the parent. But we tend to do it to our kids.
But timing is also critical. When I first get home from work, I don't want to talk about my day. I need a little time to unwind, a little time to decompress. And as our kids reach middle school, they become more like adults, and they too need a little transition time. Unfortunately for middle schoolers, sometimes their best time to talk might be a parent's most inconvenient time. One of my sons liked to sort of drape himself on the bed at about 11 o'clock at night and say, you know what really bugs me? And I would try and stay open because he was ready to talk. I wanted to be ready to listen.
And try and stay awake, yes. So that's,
and then try and stay awake and not yawn, because then I'm not listening, right?
Oh, we can relate to that. And I guess, you know, we're concerned about our kids sort of not paying attention, but we're easily distracted by, you know, by technology and everything else too, right? It's easy to just say, yeah, I understand, and sort of just nod, and while we're watching TV as well.
and the kids actually, they complain about that specifically. I try and talk to my dad, but he's watching the football game. I try to talk to my mom, she's on the phone.
That's right. And kids, what we forget is they're watching us to get clues from us on how to grow up and be an adult. So they are going to imitate us, even as they did when they were little toddlers. Even more now, as they're middle school, that 10 to 14 age group, they're starting to look at us and figure out, oh, so that's how adults resolve conflict. That's how adults pay attention. That's what adults do. Now, they aren't going to admit that to you. They did admit that to us in many ways, but they aren't going to tell you as a parent. You won't even know sometimes that they were watching and they were listening, but they're watching you to see what kind of model you present and how you live out your faith and your life, and they're going to learn from that.
You know, in fact, let's take a minute before our break, explain a little bit about the book. The book we're talking about is called Middle School, The Inside Story, What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna have written this. Is this, in fact, a book that you did by doing surveys of middle school kids?
We did. I spent a lot of time with students in my class, and then, of course, we know a lot of teachers. And we asked them to talk to students in their class, and I'll tell you, kids really want to talk about what's going on in their hearts. If I asked a question like, what do you wish your parents knew about you, we could talk for 45 minutes. I would be typing furiously because they had so much to say.
And the great thing about the book, Neil, is we found when the book got published, by the time Sue's kids, for example, had seen the manuscript, they couldn't wait to read it and couldn't wait to have their parents read it. And what's unique about this book is that it's written in such a way that, you know, you as a parent are going to get a lot out of it, but your middle schooler can read it right along with you, can talk to you about it, can discuss it. It's nothing that will embarrass them too much, and it's nothing that will make you feel awkward. And I think that speaks for itself, that the middle schoolers really did share what they were feeling, and middle schoolers everywhere will identify with them.
Mm. We're going to get more insight from middle schoolers and from wise teachers and educators. We'll talk changes and parenting and friends and other problems in school in general as we find out what middle schoolers, what kids are telling Cynthia and Sue, and maybe won't tell you, but we can get some inside information as we talk middle school, the inside story. Cynthia Tobias, founder and CEO of Apple Street's Applied Learning Styles and bestselling author. Sue Acuna has loved being a middle school teacher for over 20 years, and her students openly and honestly share their world with her every day, and so we're getting great insight. We've got some copies of the book to give away. Love to have you join the conversation. Maybe you have a child in that category or one coming soon and wondering about some specific areas of relationship or study, whatever it might be. Join the conversation at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We do have some copies of the book to give away, so it'd be well worth your while to just call in and join the program. And we'll talk more with Cynthia and Sue in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Setting the world on fire is probably okay. It's I'm concerned about the, you know, stuff in the garage. Maybe that's more the issue. We're talking middle school, the inside story, what kids tell us but don't tell you. Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna are my guests. They've authored this wonderful resource, practical, helpful, wonderful insights, and really revealing, as they have, in fact, heard from lots of middle school kids. And here's some of the issues that they're dealing with. And I'm wondering, I guess, Sue, and maybe we'll start with you and Cynthia, are the concerns, the problems different today than maybe, you know, 20 years ago? You've both been in education for a long time. What's your thought?
In some ways, they certainly are. You know, the whole social media piece is a big deal. When I was in junior high, if someone wanted to say something bad about me, they could get on the phone and call a friend and they could gossip together. But in the 21st century, if someone wants to say something about me, mean about me, they've got an audience of you know, dozens, if not hundreds, on social media. Right. There's also the issue of the selfie. If I take a picture of myself now as a 13-year-old and post it online, I'm going to judge my self-worth by how many likes I get. And that's a tough one for parents to battle, but one that we really need to be aware of.
And I do think it's different in that way, but that we also had some real timeless things that came out when we did the list of fears, you know, what the top 10 fears might be for middle schoolers. And typical things came out like terrorists and scary things. But when we finally got down to it and said, what about the fears that you don't really admit, but they really are top in your mind? And number one was unanimously in the middle schoolers we talked to, feeling stupid. You know, looking stupid, being embarrassed in some way. And I think all of us still identify with that, feeling kind of ugly or awkward or, you know, not knowing who you're supposed to sit with or what you're supposed to say. And that seems to be perennial regardless of any technology.
Yeah, I mean, that's I guess, almost kind of an unwritten code, isn't it? I mean, you have to sort of learn the code. This is how we get along and function with other kids that are all as insecure as we are, but probably don't show it on the outside.
It is, and you know, a lot of that parents can't do anything about, but some of it we can do something about. And I love some of Sue's, what she talks about with her kids especially and her kids' parents. And that is just, you know, on the lookout for ways to spare their feelings. In other words, not to let them know you're doing it, but pushing that that drink that's just about at the edge of the table, kind of quietly pushing it forward a little bit when they're not looking, or not sitting in the middle of the theater, in the middle of the row, so that your awkward middle schooler is going to have to fall over everybody getting out. Just small things that you can help them save face without them even knowing that you're helping, as they're trying to figure out all the things you can't help them with.
And then when they do something embarrassing, to either pretend you don't notice or to downplay it, to just, you know, grab the towel and help clean it up, but not make a big deal out of it. And then definitely never to mention it in front of them to someone else. Don't tell everybody, oh, you know what you did the other day? It was so funny. Because your poor middle schooler is standing there just writhing in embarrassment.
Well, because, I mean, it's just, we can talk about that, and you do address that, you know, where the title of the first chapter, where nobody has gone before. And in fact, that is the issue, right? I mean, our middle school is a time when adolescents are, I mean, there's maturing, there's growth, there's gangliness. Huh?
And there's a physiological reason for their clumsiness, and that's because, you know, they're growing so much. You look at the difference between the beginning of seventh grade and the end of eighth grade. Some of the boys especially have grown 6 to 8 inches. And the girls are just growing differently. But when they hit growth spurts, their hands and feet grow first, then their arms and legs, and then their torso, which is good because they're more balanced that way. But they literally might not know where their hands and feet end, so they're tripping over their shadows on the carpet, and they're crashing into door jams. And every year when I ask how many of them are suffering from this crashing into furniture that's been in their houses their whole lives, their hands all go up. And when I tell them why they're crashing into furniture, they say, oh, please tell my parents. They just think I'm clumsy.
That's right. And the other thing we know physiologically happens is they truly do need more sleep. When your body is growing at that rapid a rate, it's really almost like dog years between us as adults and how they're doing it then. When it's growing that rapidly, they sleep more, and parents tend to get irritated. You know, you haven't even done anything, and you're sleeping in again, and why are you sleeping so much, and why are you so lazy? And a lot of times, it's not just that. There really is a physiological need to get more rest.
Such good words that we need to hear, because we just can sort of get caught up in our own way of doing things in mind and just forget that, you know, there are these little mini adults that need our watch, care, and concern. I want to take Lorraine's call here. She called this morning. By the way, our phone number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Talking with Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna about the middle school years. And Lorraine has a question relating to peer pressure. Lorraine, go ahead. You're on with Cynthia and Sue.
Yeah, I was just wondering about if you address the issue of drugs for kids in middle school. I know we've had even an overdose of kids that you would just never think or using, especially like even heroin, you know, in this area. So
I find that the issue of drugs is like a lot of other dangerous things with school. On the one hand, you don't want to give too much information or create too much curiosity. But on the other hand, they're certainly hearing about it from other people. And if we don't warn our kids, hey, somebody may, they may not offer you a needle, you know, the kids know about the big scary drugs, but they may say, sniff some of this or eat some of this and you'll feel so much better. If we don't warn our kids ahead of time that this may happen and that it's a very dangerous thing, they are so susceptible to peer pressure. And it's really hard for them to withstand the taunting of, oh, you're such a big baby or you're such a goody-goody. And we have to equip them to be stronger than that, to understand that the long-term effects are so much more important than the short-term just being part of the crowd.
And Lorraine, we do inside the book, we list some red flags, some things to watch for, and we do give some quotes that the kids told us how, when they noticed that some of their friends are doing weird things or doing drugs and it catches them off guard. So we don't go into a lot of detail because that's not necessarily the purpose of the book, but we do recommend a couple resources and we will give you some just some things to watch for and things to look out for.
I assume, Cynthia and Sue, that, I mean, a lot of kids probably hadn't even crossed their mind probably about even, you know, doing this until, what, they get into the group of friends and they hear about somebody's doing something. And so, I mean, I guess that's probably the thing that maybe surprises us as parents, right? Where did this thought even come from?
Well, and also, unfortunately, now with television shows, if parents aren't careful about what they're watching, or sometimes even when they are, but they're with other friends. If you notice, most of the television shows these days, the sitcoms and even the dramas and the things that kids are allowed to watch, it has a lot of sex and drugs and immorality woven into the storylines to make it appear totally normal and acceptable. So there, we do have to really make sure that we are combating that in a positive way, but definitely a very deliberate way to help give them some counterbalance.
I also find the middle schoolers are very aware that the big scary drugs like heroin and LSD, that those are bad for you and they would never try those. But if someone offers them an over-the-counter product and says, oh, this can't be dangerous because you can just buy it at the drugstore, they're not always smart enough to understand that being able to buy it easily does not mean that it's safe. And that's, I think, where education comes in.
And I guess that's something we probably want to pick up on more as well, that they're not smart enough to understand. I mean, there literally is, in terms of brain development, they aren't smart enough to understand a lot of things, right? And we only have about a minute left before the break. But.
Right, and part of that is because the front part of the brain that tells you things are dangerous is not as developed as the back part of the brain that tells you something might be fun.
That's right. So impulse is great.
Yeah.
Which is where we end up with lots of impulsive behavior. We're talking about the inside story of middle school. I mean, it's maybe been a long time since you and I have been to middle school, and we probably don't really want to go back because we can still remember some of the scars, perhaps. We're talking middle school, the inside story today with Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna. The subtitle of the book is What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. And we do have some copies to give away. And we'd love to have you share with us maybe a question or a concern, or you have children or grandchildren in that age, would like to just get some good practical advice. We'll answer your questions. Cynthia and Sue will answer your questions. I'll just chime in and roll my eyes or nod my head or something maybe. But you're welcome to join the conversation. Here's the phone number. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Carissa will take your call, and we'll get you locked in with Cynthia and Sue and get some great encouragement and some advice. Or you want to drop us a note, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page and then send us an email right there. There's a link right there. So join the broadcast. We'll continue with Cynthia Tobias, Sue Acuna in just a moment as we talk middle school here on Connecting Faith. It's not easy being a tween or a teen, no question about it. And we're talking about those middle school years and getting the inside story today. In fact, that's the title of the new book from Tyndale and Fuchs and the Family. It's Middle School, the Inside Story, written by Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna. The subtitle is What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. Sue has been a middle school teacher for over 20 years, and Cynthia is founder and CEO of Apple Street, Applied Learning Styles, best-selling author of 11 books, including The Way They Learn and Every Child Can Succeed. And we're glad to have them on with us today. And again, you'd like to join the conversation. It's 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We do have some copies of the book to give away. And ladies, we just touched a little bit on peer pressure and the taunting. And I wonder if maybe you can say a little bit more about that, because it seems like, you know, the whole area of bullying is so so nefarious, I guess. And I'm just wondering how can we help our kids to, you know, celebrate their peers, but not let them determine their values. And Cynthia, maybe we can start with you.
Well, you know, Sue's got some great guidelines. We kind of divided into looking at boys and girls. The bullying has very different effects and very different causes sometimes, even because of the gender. And I think a big part of it is, again, with the parent, if you can help to build the confidence in your child for who they are becoming and for what their strengths are, and you can focus on their strengths, it's going to help them be less competitive and less likely, less competitive between in a negative way, and less likely to be mean to each other in ways that only junior hires can. But Sue has some very practical strategies.
I've found that with girls, you know, the bullying, of course, comes from being very insecure. And if I can be more threatening and stronger than another girl, then I have all the power. And so I teach girls to try and take that power away by not giving them the ability to have it. And one way to do that is to make eye contact with someone who's trying to bully you. Because when you walk by with your head down and kind of cowering, it just makes you look like a victim. And so I teach girls, walk with your head up. If you know someone has a reputation for being mean, look her in the eye, not in a threatening way, but just a comfortable gaze. But do hold her gaze and don't just look away like you expect to be picked on. With boys, of course, it's much more physical. And with boys, we have a very good discussion in class about the difference between defending yourself and hitting back. And defending yourself from being hurt is certainly okay. Turning into the aggressor is not okay, because then things just escalate. For middle school kids, though, the toughest part is when to involve the adults, because there's just an unwritten code that says you don't rat people out, you don't tell on people, you don't get them into trouble. And so helping them understand that there's a line, and when you can no longer deal with things, or when someone is in some serious trouble, you need to let an adult know. But they also need adults in their lives that they can trust who will protect their identity so that they don't deal with further repercussions. And it's a tough balancing act.
It is. But, you know, one of the things, too, that adults can do and parents can do is just what Sue was talking about with eye contact, with your kids' friends, with their classmates. When you see them, especially on social events or when you see them out there when you're dropping your kids off, no kid should be allowed to go under the radar. And that, you know, just a smile, a pleasant word, just to call them by name. I can remember a couple different times with my boys. They would be so embarrassing if their mother came and defended them. But it's not that, it's a pretty good deal when your mom knows the names of your friends and she can look them in the eye and she can just talk to them pleasantly as if it's no big deal. They're not under the radar that way.
Mm. You talked about, middle schoolers, sort of the code is you don't rat people out. I mean, you just don't. But so how do you get your kids to talk then? Because there are times when you just need to find out, hey, what really is going on with you and your friends and school and relationships, all those things.
I think, first of all, it's important that you demonstrate empathy. That is just my buzzword when I talk to parents. You need to let your student know, let your middle schooler know that you do kind of understand what's going on, and don't jump in to solve the problem right away. That is one thing that kids tell us over and over again. I don't like to tell my parents what's going on because then they go off, which to kids is parents getting all wound up and excitable and maybe even loud. And so they don't want to tell them things because they don't want parents to jump in and solve it for them. So if a parent can listen and say, wow, whew, that sounds tough, what do you want to do about that? What do you plan on doing about that? Do you need some help? They're going to get a much better response.
And when we talked to middle school kids on serious issues, I mean, when there were serious bullying issues, we had several of them that had been that had really gone through what is a very legitimate bullying thing. And they said that they and their friends said if they could have had a much more anonymous method of reporting the behavior, that they might have been persuaded to stop it earlier and to report it earlier. But there really is this absolute fear and mortification of being discovered that you are the rat, that you are the betrayer, and you're the kid who can't be trusted, and it's debilitating. So, you know, when it comes to the really serious stuff, the kids told us, you know, if there were only a better way of reporting, like at school, where you didn't have to give too much information about yourself so that you couldn't possibly be tracked, that they would tend to be more open about it.
You know, you talked about kids don't want parents to be solving their problems for them all the time, but so we don't want to rescue our kids. We know about helicopter parents, but so how do we balance that with giving them the tools to succeed? And you know, maybe what is a helicopter parent, just in case anybody, you know, wonders if they are one?
To me, a helicopter parent is one who takes care of all the details of their children's lives, from what the homework assignment is to when it's due to what their, you know, scheduling is, just everything. And they don't let kids have any independence, and they don't expect them to have any independence. A helicopter parent will show up in my classroom door and their eyes blazing, and they're just incensed because they heard that their child was wronged or treated badly, and they don't stop first to get all of the details. That would be one piece of advice I would give to parents. Before you decide to be upset, make sure you get details from another person. It can be your child's friend or a child's friend's parent or the teacher or someone else in the class. Find out what's going on. Take a look at all sides and then sit down and discuss with your child what that child's part is in the situation and maybe even how that child wants you to get involved.
Yeah, and I think asking the question, you know, just being honest and asking the question, if the child has a problem, you say, would you like a suggestion? Would you like my help on this? And if they say no, then just back off for a little while and maybe ask again later. But asking it means that you get invited when they say, well, yeah, I probably could, you know, all right, what? And then you've been invited, and so they're going to listen and not be defensive. But just asking them and talking to them about it honestly really makes a big difference.
And I would do that with my own kids. I would say, is this where I'm supposed to be giving you space, or is this where I'm supposed to be concerned and help you out? It's okay to ask.
Just simple phrasing like that can make such a difference. I mean, as we talked about some of those three basic things, be listened to, be understood, and be taken seriously. That's one of the ways that we can do that, certainly. Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna are with us today. We're talking middle school, The Inside Story. If you have a question, you can join us or comment. It's 877-933-2484. One of the things that, as I was reading your book, I guess I hadn't really thought about it before, but you said that, you know, middle school is, I mean, school's important, no doubt about that, but, I mean, it's not at the point where your whole life is going to be, completely upset if you don't get the best grades or you don't, you know, develop in certain ways or take these things. I mean, it seems like there's an awful lot of pressure that we have to just get into the right things right away and, you know, from fifth grade on. I mean, our life is sort of planned out. But you're saying, you know, we've got a little flex time here, right?
Well, you know, you've got a margin for error. The price tags are still smaller for mistakes. And that's not to say that you don't want your kids to work hard and to learn to study. And it's not that you're letting them get by with doing nothing. But what you can do is give a little bit of grace, knowing those grades are not permanent until ninth grade. So this is when they can experiment a little with what works. And if you fail, then you could say, well, let's figure out why it didn't work and let's try something different the next time, instead of feeling like you've just lost your college scholarship, you've just lost your whole future. This is the time when they can have a little room and a little space, not to goof off, not to be lazy, but space to experiment and say, and to figure out about their strengths and what am I going to need to do, and if this didn't work, what else can I try?
And what Cynthia teaches about learning styles comes in really handy here, because this is a good time for kids, as the homework levels get higher and the pressure gets harder, to figure out what kinds of systems work for them. also, if they know their learning styles, they know their strengths, they can discover whether a notebook with dividing pockets and folders is best for them, or whether maybe they just need a big, I've had kids who have actually used a cardboard box, because all their papers would at least land there, and they could find what they needed. They just weren't the kind of kids who could take the time to find the science section of their notebook, put the paper in the rings, close the rings, zip it up. They didn't have time for that. But to be able to use a system, maybe sticky notes are more helpful than an actual dated planner. But this is when they can experiment, like Cynthia said, and figure out what works for them. And if they find that it doesn't work, the consequences aren't too bad. It's not like this is going to affect their entrance into college yet.
And there are so many pressures about so many things that one of the things the parents can do to ease a little pressure is not to be absolutely absolutely determined that they get straight A's no matter what. That may very well not be the most important thing at all in any particular year during middle school.
And Cynthia, I know that as you, you know, mother of twins, I mean, your boys had different learning styles, even though they're twins, and that, so, I mean, parents need to be okay with that, right? One of my kids wants to do it this way. Another, it's not so important that we have sort of, I mean, we have some framework, but we don't have to have the system drive the problems.
Right. Yeah, my twins, 2 minutes apart, couldn't have been more different in the way they wanted to study and what worked for them. You know, Mike was very analytic, very organized, wanted to be quiet, had all the normal things. Robert was just totally opposite, had a hard time remembering what book to bring home because he had been talking with friends, didn't want to necessarily work on homework as long as somebody else was having more fun than he was. I mean, we had to really encourage each boy to experiment with what works, because the bottom line is, guys, here's what needs to be done by the end of the night. The bottom line is, here's what needs to be accomplished. And then that helps, again, you're modeling for your kids how you're going to get through life that way, too.
And Cynthia does a good job of cautioning parents that the system that might be most comfortable for them might not work for their own kids. And so you may be a sit at a table with bright light and have everything in front of you, while your child may be at work on the floor with a dim lamp on and still be just as successful.
So the accountability stays intact, but the method may have to change. And this is a good time to experiment with what works.
It's one of the best-selling books that Cynthia Tobias has written. It's called The Way They Learn, and Every Child Can Succeed. And I recommend those to you. Cynthia is founder and CEO of Apple Street, which is Applied Learning Styles. And she's been on Folks in the Family and been our broadcast as well. And we're glad to welcome her back. And Sue Acuna has loved being a middle school teacher for over 20 years and has co-authored the book, The Middle School, The Inside Story, What Kids Tell Us But Don't Tell You. And we invite you to join the conversation. In fact, we're going to get to Sarah has a question for us. We'll get to after the break regarding the whole relationship changing friendship issue, the girl drama. All right, we're going to get into drama coming up in just a moment. You want to join the conversation? We've got time for another call or two. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. More with Cynthia and Sue in a moment. You remember middle school? No, I'd rather not, right? A rough ride, lots of insecurity, peer pressure, awkwardness, and the world rocking change. We're learning all about it anew and afresh today with some wonderful insights, thanks to Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuna, who co-authored the book, The Middle School, The Inside Story. And Sue's been a teacher for over 20 years, teaching 8th grade, going back to school here in a couple of weeks. Cynthia's been involved in education and teaching and learning styles, the way they learn, and Every Child Can Succeed. It's a couple of her best-selling books, and we're happy to have them on with us today. So let's talk a little bit about the drama. How do parents help navigate these seemingly ever-changing friendship situations? And you've got the girl drama, the eyeball rolling, the making fun of, the gossip, etc. Sarah Rosa wants to know.
Girl drama is a perennial part of my school year, as you can imagine. One of the things I try and do, first of all, is reassure girls that it's not permanent, that it actually does get better in high school. Sometimes, you know, they think it's the end of the world. And they need to know that it's not. But just to tell them that, of course, is not going to be helpful. But I really think it's important for parents to be the stable force. As your daughter comes home and says, everybody hates me, I'm not going back to school, so-and-so was mean to me today. And for mom to not immediately get on the phone, start calling people's parents, trying to find out what's going on. We've had parents who have gotten on Facebook and made inappropriate comments to other parents. Really, what girls need is for moms not to be part of the drama, but to be outside of it and to be the calming force and to help them ride it out. And like I said earlier, making eye contact with a bully is extremely powerful. Not trying to take her on when she's with all of her friends, because she feels very powerful when she's surrounded by her friends. But if you want to actually have a conversation, which is hard to do in middle school, but occasionally happens, you want to do it one-on-one when you can. I think the hardest thing for girls to do is not to respond when something mean has been said on social media, and girls invariably tell other girls, oh, you should have seen what so-and-so said about you. To not respond is more powerful than to get involved in an altercation, but wow, it's hard to keep girls from doing that.
Cynthia, I don't know if you have anything to add. You raised boys, right? So you want to talk about boy drama?
Well, you know, there isn't a lot of drama that direction with boys. With my boys, it was, you know, just how they felt about themselves as they're struggling to understand why they are the way they are. And one of the things that helps drama across the board, I would reiterate what Sue said as far as keeping your voice calm and your manner calm. The last thing they need is for you to match them in intensity and in drama with their voice. If you can force yourself to be the calm one, you'll be so much better off, and they'll start to take their cue from you, because if it escalates and both of you end up yelling, then it's not going to go anywhere. But if you can keep it calm, gradually their decibels will come down, and they, again, you will be modeling for them. This is how you climb down off something that's really gotten you completely stirred up.
You know, I as we talk about sort of the drama, but it seems like relationships are such a big issue, and it seems like there's so much pressure to be connected in some sort of dating scenario at a younger and younger age, and we just, you know, that just has so many serious ramifications. What advice do you have for parents about how they can sort of handle and manage relationships?
Don't encourage it.
Okay. Right.
I have seen parents of sixth graders think it's cute that their son likes this other girl, and so the parents will drive them out, take them out for pizza or drive them to a movie because they just think it's cute. And it may be cute at 11, but if they're holding hands and going out to pizza and a movie at 11, what do you think they're going to be doing by the time they're 16 or 17? I think parents get too involved many times, and so to downplay it and to not encourage phone calls or gifts or linking their names together is just huge.
Yeah, it really is. It just is best to not do it at all. And interestingly enough, Neil, when we talked to the middle schoolers last month, they said the same thing. They talked, when we asked them about relationships and quote unquote dating, pretty much across the board. In fact, I'm sure it was unanimous, wasn't it, Sue? That they all said in different ways, it's pointless in middle school, and it's for heartbreak. And they said, you know, you're not anywhere close to getting married or finding somebody that's truly special for the rest of your life. So why put yourself through that kind of grief?
And these were middle schoolers we were talking to. And they freely admitted that most of dating that happens in middle school is because it makes you more popular or because someone is really needy and feels that they want someone like that in their lives. And so, yeah, their word was pointless. It's just so pointless. Mm. Now, it's hard to tell a seventh grader who's in the throes of their first relationship. They like somebody and somebody likes them back. It's hard to tell them your relationship is pointless. I like to tell my eighth graders, when they see second graders who have paired off and are supposedly going out, how do they feel about it? And they say, oh, you know, it's so cute. I tell them, you know, that is how the adult world looks at junior high relationships. You're just not old enough. You're not ready yet. I think to forbid such a thing, of course, only makes it more desirable. But for parents to just be really low-key about it and not encourage it, but be ready to ride it out when the breakups happen, because that can be all-consuming. That becomes more important than homework, becomes more important than anything else. And that's when, excuse me, parents have to go back to the empathy. Wow, I can see you're really upset. That must really hurt. and not say, I told you not to get in that relationship in the first place. If you would just listen to me, that shuts down communication.
Well, and one good way to introduce it might be also if to share a part of the book where we talk about it, part, you know, and just kind of read a little bit of that together and just say, you know, are they right? Is this true? And that gives a little discussion in a safe place with your middle schooler.
I've gotten the kind of the impression, even as I was reading the book and just listening to both of you share, that there's a lot to be said for parents that can just sort of chill a little bit and relax, sort of, you know, lower our tone of, you know, kind of change our tone of voice, calm down, you know, just learn some empathy, that's going to go a long way.
Absolutely.
It really is, yeah. And you imagine I spend, you know, the day with 25 to 30 kids, and if I were to get upset every time something went wrong or every time one of them misbehaved, it would be chaos, and they wouldn't respond, and they wouldn't talk to me. So the parent who can stay calm, who can be understated, who can ride out the moods, because we know the middle schoolers' moods change as quickly as their tennis shoes, then they're just going to have a lot more success, and they're going to hear a lot more and learn a lot more and be able to communicate.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely.
Let me ask about, were there, I mean, probably don't have time to get into it. One of the things you suggested about visiting the new school in the springtime when students are around, just say maybe 60 seconds, a word about that, why that, I mean, obviously visiting the new school is important if they're transitioning, but going when students are around seemed like a good idea to me.
Especially for middle schoolers who are going from 6th or 7th grade into a school that has older kids, it's good for them to see what they look like. Often they find out it's not nearly as scary as they had imagined it. They thought there were these big, you know, chain-wearing, club-carrying big guys, and they discover, well, they're not quite as big as I thought, and, hey, some of them are actually kind of small, and some of them look really friendly. It's good to have that visual.
Say where we got a few minutes left. Were there one or two maybe big surprises that you learned from middle schoolers when you talked to them, or things that, you know, you maybe you hadn't expected? You've both been teaching for a long time. What was maybe the most insightful?
You know, for me, Neil, I was struck along several different lines. One of the things that struck me most was when we talked about spiritual beliefs and values, and the kids said and they admitted they just don't feel comfortable talking to their parents about this, but they're in the process of sort of personalizing their faith. They ask hard questions and they have doubts whether or not is this really for me, and when do I get to make my own decision about church, and you know, is what we believe about God true and why. And they said, you know, they felt like if they tried to ask their parents that their parents again would sort of freak out and come down harder on them. And yet in their heart of hearts, two or three of them even just last month said, I find myself with doubts, and that bothers me because I shouldn't have doubts. And so they really do want some discussion about it, and they do want some direction without having you feel like that they're going to be a rebel. That's not going to be an automatic assumption.
And I think for me the most surprising thing was how, despite all appearances, they really do still want their parents to be involved in their lives. We did give the kids a bad time the last time we talked to them because they expect their parents just to know. I mean, we asked them, how is a parent supposed to be able to tell whether you want a hug or whether you want to be left alone? And they said, well, there are parents, they're just supposed to know. So parents, I like to say a parent needs to have a thermometer that they take out and wave around to sort of take the temperature of the air around their middle schooler. And if the thermometer says, talk to me, I need some help, then it's a good time to approach. But if you get more of a leave me alone, I don't want you around right now, then you might just need to tread water a little bit and watch for a better time. Watch for that late night or maybe a drive in the car when you're not face-to-face, which is sometimes an easier time to talk. But they really do still want their parents there. They want their support. They want their approval much more than parents realize. So don't be put off by their prickly outsides.
It's amazing how much, you know, sometimes we forget to smile because we're so exasperated. But it's amazing how far a smile will go and a little sense of humor. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying, did I just say the wrong thing? Okay, wait a minute. I need a do-over. You know, just a little sense of humor injected now and then. Lighten up. Don't let up. Don't let off the wheel. Let your hand off the wheel. But if you could smile a little bit more, you'll be amazed at how much that helps.
I'm looking forward to seeing the Tobias Acuña mood rings coming back.
I think that's a great idea, Neil.
The middle school version.
Sure. That would be perfect. Great resource, middle school, the inside story. I'd recommend it to you, and something that maybe if you don't have middle schoolers, you could maybe even pass on to your church youth leader, which would probably appreciate that as well. And we didn't really even take time to talk about that in terms of church youth groups, but you can get some great insight from Cynthia Tobias and Sue Acuña, and this is a great resource. I recommend it to you. Middle School, The Inside Story. Cynthia Tobias, founder and CEO of Apple Street, Applied Learning Styles, best-selling author. Sue Acuña has been a middle school teacher for over 20 years, heading back to the classroom here in just a couple of weeks. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great insight, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. It was a great time.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and again, it's we mentioned at the beginning of the program, if you missed part of it, you can always catch the podcast or pass it on to a friend. It's all shareable. Go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page.